Like people would look at it, they're like, okay, this guy's crazy, but he was the technologist of his day.
The energy mix is such a big mix that we can't just say one thing is bad and another thing is good.
If you're only going to look at the consumption side, then okay, well, it takes energy to literally do anything.
Those people who find things useful, they're not going to look for bad things in them.
But if you were in a place with a strong currency, with access to banking, you might be blind to how beneficial Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining actually is.
The environment to do cryptocurrency mining business is way different than it was in 2018.
Hey, Sergi, thanks for coming back on the podcast. I've been looking forward to this one.
Absolutely, Will. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, so we're just talking right after you hopped in the meeting, and it seems like so much has happened. Like, it is just an absolutely crazy time, not just for the mining industry, but globally, right? How are you seeing things on your end?
Well, I mean, let's be frank, it is turbulent times. Things are upside down in the world, in my home country. I'm actually from Ukraine, so been tough a little bit on me. So I had to go through unpleasant experiences in my life. That aside, business perspective, of course, things have changed since we are in cryptocurrency mining, and cryptocurrency mining depends 90% on electricity. At least it's operational cost, all electricity. Now electricity prices and energy markets are going sideways, through the roof, through the bottom. Like, things are going crazy, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, a lot of those, so many miners were doing different things, like locking in like fixed floating price PPAs, all these different things. And those people who are able to lock in fixed prices are probably feeling pretty good about themselves right now.
Oh, definitely they are. But I'll tell you, there are not that many, honestly. People got used to natural gas prices to be at $2 per MCF. So everyone hoped to keep buying from the market because it was very cheap.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I'm curious as to like how all this shakes out for miners right now. Because I feel like, as you know, when you get in at prices when the miners are like much lower costs, a lot of times people don't have as much capital when it's the best time to get in. And I feel like we've seen these prices go from like, they were peaking at like $100 a terahash or something like that. And now, I mean, what prices are you seeing nowadays? It's like, I mean, I'm seeing rigs that were costing like 10 grand going for like $2,000.
Yeah, well, everything has changed. But, you know, frankly saying, I've seen this before. We've been on the market since 2017, and we did experience the crypto winter of 2018, 2019. The only big difference is that at that time, natural gas prices, they were almost all-time low at $1.52. Which of course made the electricity prices to be low. Nowadays, though, we have very opposite situation where the power prices are very high, and that makes cryptocurrency mining very tough to do at all in general. So what we can see is, of course, big pressure on manufacturers and resellers of cryptocurrency mining equipment. I have seen prices as low as $14, $15 for S19. Frankly saying, in my opinion, that's a reasonable price. And I think there is more room. We should be around $10, $12. That's where everything should have been. Let's be honest, in the last year, there has been so much money deployed into cryptocurrency mining equipment that now people are sitting flooded with that equipment, not understanding what they're going to do. Goal of our company was always to invest money in infrastructure versus buying equipment that depreciates so quickly. Because at the end of the day, you can have all cryptocurrency mining equipment in the world, but if it's sitting in your warehouse, you know, it's called pallet mining versus Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, just mining dust if it's just sitting there.
Exactly.
So, I mean, in terms of like planning it, because this is something where even when you've seen the cycle before, and I myself just went through this, is you almost get drawn into the hype when everything's going well, there are all these good headlines coming in, and I mean, you just see a lot of people who haven't been in mining just getting burned and then having larger debt than the actual miners are worth. I guess, like, from your perspective, how do you kind of like deal with it in those different cycles? Like, is there a type of way that you approach the cycles, or do you think about it when you're in the middle of it? Like, you mentioned one thing is like you guys are out there focusing on infrastructure, which I think is great, because at the end of the day, whenever you do have those busts, people who have the infrastructure, they're in a very, very good spot. On the other hand, though, it's on the mining side, if you've got that equipment and then the price starts shooting up and you own that hardware, then you're feeling pretty good, because you could have just doubled your money in hardware if you're on the other end of that. So I guess that's just to say, is like, how do you kind of think about the approach to mining and understanding that you're in a very volatile business?
Yeah, well, it is, first of all, very, very tough to understand where the market going to bottom or where it's going to up. I'll be frank, when Bitcoin passed 20 grand a couple years ago, basically having new all-time highs, I was kind of worried a little bit. I was not sure where we're going to stop. I thought we're going to be around $20,000 to $30,000 for some time. And then we were like after 30, then we like 40, 50, 60, you know, like everyone was losing their mind, me including. I was like, I mean, it has to stop. And then it's kept going. I was like, maybe it's not going to stop. Maybe it's going to keep going.
It's like, maybe it'll be a super cycle. Who knows?
Right. But look, there are so many events that influence the price and influence that, right? Well, we have to keep in mind that we went through double swan event pandemic, where not only a lot of people got sick, but from economic perspective, we were working from home. So a lot of folks got involved in cryptocurrency during that period of time. In addition, there was so much money has been distributed to the system, which of course went to cryptocurrency as well. So there are so many things that come into play in this period of time within this super cycle. So I think we're kind of where we're supposed to be, maybe not that much. But in terms of what do we plan or did we plan? Of course not. Let's be honest. Like, how can you plan that this is going to be bad? Of course, we do have some certain ways of managing our cash flows and managing our business. But the market was so good, such a long period of time, that, I mean, you couldn't imagine things go bad. And you definitely couldn't imagine the things to go this bad. And they wouldn't. Honestly, they wouldn't. War in the middle of Europe influenced things a lot in terms of this economy in general. And the shift in the paradigm of energy market changed completely. We've been talking about transition to solar and wind for such a long time. And with this current new administration, I mean, it was like a done deal. And here we are. Figured, hopefully we need some oil and gas for a little bit longer, right? So now that's a big shift. But when you talk about shifting energy markets and start from, you know, being super green and doing solar and then moving to natural gas, you have to understand that no oil and gas investor are going to put money into something if they don't believe it's going to last for some time. You know, not that many people really want to invest. They really don't want to shift and invest in oil and gas. It's like, we'll just wait a little bit. We'll see what happens. So on our end, I mean, our play has been always energy. We have always looked for lower prices, be it in, self-generation from natural gas, be it stranded locations with the stranded power and substations. We've always been looking for this type of power, and we're still looking the same way. But I'll be frank, it caught us off guard.
It is really crazy too, because what you had mentioned, when everything's going very good, you almost feel like you're leaving money on the table if you started selling it and was doing what would have been at that time the more fiscally responsible thing to do, knowing how things play out. But hindsight's always 20/20, and that's, I think, one of the things that makes our industry so exciting. I feel like I'd almost get bored if I was if I was in a normal industry.
We all waited for crypto winter, right? Like those people who've been in it, they're like, okay, it's coming. And then it's like new thing, NFT hype, then another hype. And it's like, oh my God. And then more regulation, good regulations, then, you know, more companies adopting Bitcoin. It's like, maybe we're done. Maybe we're done with crypto winters.
Yeah. I'm curious. My view has changed on this many times, but are you guys focused on just Bitcoin, or are you guys doing like Bitcoin and other types of mining, or how do you view, I guess, everything outside of Bitcoin?
It's a good question. Well, we were in crypto winter in 2018. We always were thinking about getting into different type of computational process, you know, like AI training, data mining, all that stuff that can be done with GPUs. We never did go in that direction because, I mean, it's totally different business. It's way more sophisticated business. You need different type of talent. So we kind of focus more on building infrastructure and securing power as much as possible. So currently the company is focused on specifically Bitcoin mining. We never, on a grand scale, of course, mined any other cryptocurrencies. We tried in, you know, lab environment to mine Ethereum when it was still possible, and Ethereum Classic and other coins. But today it's Bitcoin only. And I think it's a good bet. Cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin is very much adopted. We have more and more positive news coming out. So I think, you know, we'll have that separation of Bitcoin from other cryptocurrency very soon. It's coming.
Yeah, I feel like the industry is very, it's just too, there's too much going on. It's difficult to stay on top of everything that's happening. And like, I'll try and stay up to date with it as much as I can. Like, I've got a lot of friends who are in Web3, and I'll hear things through them. And then, learn about new technologies, but keeping your head above water on all these different things is just tough. I mean, just being in the industry for a number of years, I've started going deeper down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. It just sucks you into all these different things. You start learning about things outside of Bitcoin, outside of directly, you know, what you're doing as a miner, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah.
And it does tie into everything, especially like being a business leader. A lot of people, and if you're not leading a company, you might not be paying as much attention to the regulatory risk. But as a leader of a business, that's a big consideration of where you're going to place your miners, like what country you're going to place that. From your perspective, like how do you view it with Easy Blockchain and where you're going to mine, how you evaluate sites, how you find cheap energy? How do you juggle all those variables?
It became a little bit different from what it was before. Now there are like more regulation, and I'll tell you more regulation specifically from physical infrastructure build out. Now, when you go to an area, you tell you're going to build a Bitcoin mining farm. People know what it is. They know which permit you need to pull. They understand what type of electrical inspection they need to do. It's in some ways better, because now you don't have to explain every time what it is. So from that perspective, that's evolved a long way. As well as, you know, from regulatory perspective, of course, we go to the areas which are, they accept Bitcoin, like, you know, places like Wyoming, North Dakota, Texas, you know, Oklahoma. Those states are very open, Georgia as well, very open for business in general. So if it is a state that is open for business and they want to attract talent, they want to attract capital, they want to attract new jobs, that's the place for your cryptocurrency mining to be. And we happen to be mostly in those places. So it's interesting that you brought up the regulatory compliance issues, because now when you're on the business, I mean, you pay attention more to who do you deal with? Who is your customer? Like Easy Blockchain has started recently our hosting service on scale, which we didn't do before, evaluate every customer from a different perspective. It's not only, hey, I have a few miners or 1,000 miners or 100,000 miners. We want to work with you. Now, like when the company comes in, we kind of do a due diligence on them. Where are they from? Where's the company registered? How much money they generate? And what's their credit risk and so on? Because it's already different. It's already a different business. Your banks, who you bank with, finally, you can bank with someone. They actually, you know, they ask questions like, where's the money coming from? And I think it's good as long as it's kind of on a reasonable level when we don't get to the point that, you know, everything is questioned in this business. But I think we went a very big way. So far, the environment to do cryptocurrency mining business is way different than it was in 2018.
Oh, it's kind of crazy thinking back to that time. I mean, just you mentioning being able to go and actually have people know what it is when you mention it, you're having a lot less of those intro conversations. Because at the end of the day, too, the people in energy, they got to pay attention to this. It's almost becoming part of the business on the energy side. And just the way that it interacts with the grid and then just all these different structures and ways that you can. I just spoke with the CEO of Stronghold and the way that they're managing it. They're really taking, it's a similar approach to you in the sense of they're considering themselves in many ways a big energy company, and just understanding all those nuances. You plug in this technology with mining and then all of a sudden you can do all these other creative things with your business model that just give you a competitive advantage over any energy company who doesn't figure this out over the next like 10, 20 years.
Look, it's interesting you brought it up, because last week I visited the mining conference in Austin area. And I was giving this presentation about Bitcoin mining merging with energy industry. That's my pure belief that within, you know, next 5 years, you will have cryptocurrency mining operations all over the place. And they're going to be on the backyard of power plants, on the backyards of oil and gas pads. Midstream company is going to install them. The solar and wind company is going to install them more and more. And it will be utilized more as a tool for energy management versus for printing coins.
It's interesting too, because just the fact that you can generate value from this excess energy, and then that's portable through digital currencies, it is like a completely new technology. And I've started thinking about this more and more of, hey, new technologies, when you see them introduced, it just changes the fabric of society. Like before the printing press, it was very difficult to get ideas across to many people at once. Then all of a sudden, from the printing press to the internet, now all of a sudden you could upload, you could record something once and then spread it to anyone who's plugged into the internet across the entire network, it's just a completely different concept. I mean, just us speaking right now on this podcast, this is something that you could never have done. The only way that you'd hear this conversation is if you were in the same room with us, right? So it just changes the way that business is done. And I would pose it as a very difficult challenge to anyone to try and start a successful business in 2020 without having the internet at your disposal. You can't build a successful business in today's world like that versus who knows, like, in 100 years, what tools you're going to need at that point in time.
Yeah, it's
very different. And I guess what you just mentioned is that type of an evolution from the mining perspective and the energy perspective. And I share that, actually. That's one of the things that I've been thinking about. And I'm curious to hear what some of your predictions are longer term. And by longer term, I mean, you see this merging happening right now with mining and the energy sector, right? We know that every 4 years, you have the halving. Half the Bitcoin can be produced. So over time, it's going to get more and more competitive to mine. You know, 5 years ago, it was a lot easier to mine than it is today. So you start playing that out over a longer period of time. Do you have any thoughts on what might happen?
Yeah, I have an opinion about it. Look, the way I'm seeing this is that Bitcoin mining have been revolutionizing different industries. Like first, cryptocurrency miners were just mining crypto. You know, they were revolutionizing in general, internet, the way we transfer value over internet. So that's basically the first use case. Then more and more in cryptocurrency mining was happening. And we found a need of cheaper power, cheaper sources of energy. So that's why we were looking to collocate with hydropower plants. That's why there are massive mining farms are like in West Texas, where there is so much wind and solar. That's why we install mobile data centers with gas electric generators on the well pads so we can take that flare gas and, you know, convert that into value and reduce the CO2 emissions. So I think Bitcoin mining is almost close to its peak of revolutionizing energy. And I think we are at almost the top level of optimizing usage of energy to optimize our operations in terms of cost. So then a question comes is, well, halving is happening. What happens next if Bitcoin price doesn't go up? So I think the next revolution will be specifically in ASIC manufacturing. Mining, specifically Bitcoin mining, will lead to way bigger research and development of ASICs, SHA-256 ASICs that can mine cryptocurrency more efficiently. I believe we will see 5 nanometer, 3 nanometer, 2 nanometer, 1 nanometer, whatever those nanometers are there, very soon. Because in reality, to what point can you reduce your cost of electricity? I mean, the 3 cents electricity, that's the cheapest you can get, regardless. You do hydro, you do solar, you do wind. I mean, everything has its cost. So you're 3 cents, that's the cheapest. But today, like if you look at prices, I mean, even with five and a half cents, with the most updated equipment like S19s Pro, you're kind of very close, right? So then Bitmain came up with XP, S19 XP, which is way more efficient, way better machine. And they, you know, they're moving ahead to get better machines online, create better machines. So I think the cycle of creating way more efficient equipment is coming. And that's where the revolution going to happen. Not in energy anymore, because like we've done already almost everything with energy. I mean, we haven't harnessed energy from speed of asteroids probably yet, but like that's not here, right? So we are at that top level of energy specifically.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, because you have the energy coming down. We pretty much maxed that out, or the most efficient miners you've seen max that out in terms of efficiency. And then, yeah, the other variables are really the price of Bitcoin. But if you're assuming that the price of Bitcoin is not going to be shooting up, then really the final variable is, okay, the hardware that's actually involved in that mining. And actually, to validate with your point with trends that we've seen in the past, we've consistently seen this cycle over and over again where the equipment gets a lot more efficient. But yeah, unless there's some other crazy form of harnessing energy that we haven't heard about yet.
yeah. No, I mean, human beings shouldn't be underestimated. We can come up with so many different things, that's especially so Bitcoin miners, Well, Bitcoin miners are desperate people. They're always looking for something. cheaper power, cheaper areas, you know, better environment, so you can make money. Because this, I mean, this idea of Bitcoin mining to be compared to gold mining, I mean, it has some merit, I would say. It's similar. I mean, you like making money by doing kind of nothing, but there's so much work involved. It's like the thing with gold mining. You know, you have an idea that you're going to go and, you know, find some gold in the river doing nothing. And then it happens that you stay there forever and don't get rich. The same with crypto mining. I mean, it's a hard process. It's big infrastructure projects.
Yeah, it's hyper competitive, right? Because at the end of the day, it's tied to the free market. So really, you got to be competitive enough to be able to compete in the free market. And the asset that you're mining is Bitcoin, which is an extremely volatile asset. I mean, I personally have very big beliefs in terms of where the price of Bitcoin will go, but especially if someone's not deep in the industry and they don't understand the long-term thesis for Bitcoin, and then all of a sudden they see their portfolio drop by 50%. I mean, that can be kind of scary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. May I ask you a question? What do you think the Bitcoin price is going to be?
By what time? I mean, my predictions, I'm going to sound like a crazy person. I
say 2024, end of 2024.
Oh, okay. End of 2024. That's a tough one because it's hard to say when exactly the bull cycle is going to come. But I think by then, assuming that it comes, I'd see the price going conservatively in the next bull cycle over $100,000. Like, so that's very my conservative guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes over $1 million, which, you know, that in that short of a time frame, it's hard to tell. But I feel like in these cycles, and then my predictions get really crazy if you start going like longer term, like 10 plus years, like to 2035. But at the end of the day, it's just so hard to tell because the total pie for addressable market of Bitcoin, it depends if you're comparing it to like gold's market cap, like, you know, 10 trillion, or if you're going even bigger for a longer term and you're going with this thesis of sound money and like how much of the value in the world is going to end up being underpinned by Bitcoin, right? But it's a complete paradigm shift. So if I start going with complete paradigm shifts, then the price of Bitcoin gets pretty crazy. But if you're just going, comparing it to gold, okay, well, how long until people, you know, how long until it overtakes the market cap of gold?
Yeah, it's very interesting, especially taking in consideration new generation, right? They have all those reports, like how many millennials own Bitcoin. And you could see numbers like from 20% to 50%. But you don't see surveys where they ask how many of the same people own gold. I think the number would be like less than 1%. Honestly, I have no idea how to buy it even.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of funny when you think about it. Like, how do you even get like gold ownership?
Yeah. On eBay, you buy the coin that you're not sure if it's even real. That's the only way I know.
Yeah. Well, it also is. Yeah, that's actually funny. I actually, this was like a while back. At this point, I had known like nothing about investing. I just had a friend who had been in investment banking, and I was like, I don't know what to invest in. I mean, what should I invest in? And he's like, oh, well, you could try and invest in like gold. Like there's this gold mining company. And I just remembered like investing in it and then like having to do additional paperwork for that one investment that I had made. I don't remember all the details of it now, but as soon as I could, I sold it. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I'm done with gold.
Exactly.
Something else.
So the generation going to change, and those folks who are majority owners of gold, I mean, they'll be gone, and then they're going to be new generation, and that new generation, I mean, wouldn't care about gold.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when you look at why gold has the market cap it does, it's like, okay, well, yes, it's used in like jewelry, other types of use cases.
But that's
cases,
not what it used it.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a small part of the utility. So I think the last number I heard was, I believe it was 30% of the total market cap, which I think might be generous, is for actual utility purposes, whereas 70% of it is just people saying, hey, you want to protect your wealth, you want to store value, rather than you can diversify your wealth by holding some. And that's what makes up 70% of its market cap, is that the store of value narrative. Now, Bitcoin, there's of course utility to have a digital asset that you can send peer to peer around the world. If you want to transfer $10 billion worth of gold, it's going to be very expensive. If you want to transfer $10 billion of Bitcoin, no problem, easy, right? So there's clear utility in that alone. But then you also have the problem of people trying to protect their wealth, and that 70% of gold's market cap, the store value narrative, I think that that is one where Bitcoin blows gold out of the water, because all the characteristics that you need for store of value, you know, Bitcoin is just far, far superior to gold in. So I think that the younger generation, to your point, understands this, at least to a certain degree. Being digitally native, you grow up, you can just see, okay, well, I don't care about like this mineral or asset or rock or whatever you want to call it.
It is a rock.
I'd much rather hold it in something that actually is useful, like Bitcoin. And eventually, you know, those people are going to grow older and own the wealth of the society.
Exactly. Well, look, I mean, honestly, comparing gold to Bitcoin would be nice when Bitcoin decouples from cryptocurrency, so it's not so volatile, because that's the biggest concern of those haters. Like, well, if it's a store of value, why is it so volatile, right?
Yeah.
And of course, there is a reason to that. But I think it's so volatile because the market cap is so small. So if it's higher, if it's, to your point, is $100,000 or $200,000 per coin, then it's not going to be that volatile, because you would not have that much money or capital to move the market that easily.
Yeah, that's so true. I feel like that's a big part that's overlooked. And I mean, in many ways, I think that we've seen it more recently is Bitcoin is almost acting like a high-tech growth or a high-tech stock, right? Yeah. Or like, even if you look at these companies that are behemoths today, like Amazon, I don't think Amazon went a single year without having like a drawdown of something like 30%, just because it was early stage companies. When you have smaller market caps, there's just a lot more volatility because it takes less money to move the market. And so at the end of the day, like fast forwarding, when Bitcoin has a much larger market cap, it's going to be much harder to mine, but it's also going to, you know, not be as volatile. I mean, it actually has been surprisingly not like, it has been very, had very low volatility recently. Like
it reminds me 2018, $3,000 price.
Yeah. Like
from 3,000, 3,600 tops, and then it just goes down and it's just flat. I see the same. We are like playing within that 18,000 to 20,000 range right now. To be honest, like I think we're in a way better position nowadays than we were like a couple of years ago, frankly. It's adopted. It's an asset. Like, you don't really read articles, it's dead. Now you read more articles that, you know, Bachman-Fried purchased, a bunch of cryptocurrency, or some other person acquired a company. So it's like more business news versus like speculative news, you know, those yellow pages. So it's different.
Yeah, I think that there's like a website or something that shows the number of times in the media where people have said that Bitcoin has died. I cannot remember what the website's called, but it's a very large number and it is still very much alive. It's like impossible to kill too. When you look at it from like a technology perspective, it is the most durable computing network in the entire world. And I think it's because of the miners. I mean,
miners have been overlooked for a long period of time. I think now it's a period of time where we were like more appreciated.
Yeah.
That like, those are people who actually run the machines and they do the work and they help these communities and they, hire local talent and create tech jobs and pay taxes and, you know, help the power plants to be online, keep the flaring away, reduce CO2 emissions and, you know, incentivize renewable energy. It's like, these folks, you know, deserve to leave.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this energy conversation is going and becoming much more prevalent. And, you know, we actually at SaaS Mining, we have a book club, and the book we're reading right now is called The Grid. And you hear a lot about how the grid works, like how it came to be, or you hear a lot about how it works from other miners. But I think that this book's really interesting because you really learn about like how it really works underneath and how it started, right? And I haven't finished the book yet. We haven't finished it for the reading club yet. But I'm just that in and of itself, just learning about how the energy sector works. It's like almost no one knows how when you flip on your light switch, everything works. It's just such a crazy concept that everything just works in today's day and age, where in the early days, you know, very, very few people were wealthy enough to be able to afford electricity. People didn't always have electricity, and they were using like, imagine if you were using candles when you're working late at night, or you didn't have like heating or cooling. These are just, it's a completely different world today. And it's because we found a way to harness this energy. And the interesting thing about mining is that mining helps you harness energy better and helps the energy companies deliver a better experience. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's just going to make everyone's lives better if we can have a more efficient energy sector.
Well, exactly what you said about like energy and heating and cooling. You know, I like these concepts that are built by manufacturers right now to use cryptocurrency mining equipment and reuse also the heat it creates. That's a new concept that now you can just, you know, boil the water and spread the water around. You can use that heat for greenhouses. It was kind of, you know, something weird a couple of years ago to think about it. But now when operations became more efficient and more people understand how to run crypto mining at all, they kind of like want to figure out, what do we really do with that heat? Can we use that heat for like, you know, bigger things? And not only greenhouses, but like using the heat from the Bitcoin mining machines to warm houses. That's a new thing completely, to warm water in the boilers. Very cool concept. I think it has some legs. And I think within the next couple of years, we'll see more and more. And that will prove that now, not only, I mean, we're utilizing wasted energy as an industry and helping to incentivize renewable energy, we actually reuse the energy which is created, which is heat. It's a big deal, in my opinion.
Hearing you talk through this kind of reminds me of, it's the conversation of like how the world is so different today than it was in the past, and it's going to be different in the future. You're starting to see a brain drain, and it's really picking up of just the smartest people wanting to work on new technology, wanting to work in industries like the ones that we're in, or blockchain, Web3, things like that. Just very, very intelligent people going and solving new problems. And I think that one of the interesting things that we'll also see is a lot of these smart people on the engineering side just coming over and building better systems and finding better ways to do mining or integrate with the energy sector. And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you look at like Rockefeller, Carnegie, all these guys, what they were involved in, like oil or steel, that to us sounds like, okay, well, that's an older business, you know, that's mm-hmm. not technology. But for their days, I mean, those were the technologists, right? I mean, yeah. At the time, it was crazy to think that you were just going to go and like use oil and create things with it. Like people would look at it, they're like, okay, this guy's crazy, but he was the technologist of his day. And the technologists today are working on different problems, but building things that the rest of the society don't yet see can be built.
Yeah, well, it's. I mean, the Rockefeller, I think, created the pipeline network. That's what was needed in order to transport the oil at that time. So he was like thinking, how do I bring my stuff to market quicker, right? Same way right now, like, we need to figure out the ways to optimize the operations. Where do we get cheap power? How do we use that power to have less losses? It's interesting you mentioned about the engineers getting to the game. I had a conversation with one of the engineers who worked for a major oil and gas company, and he basically was pushing this project of utilizing Bitcoin mining for flare gas in the company for a very long time. And, you know, the board was not interested in that. And at some point we basically talked with him, and he's saying, hey, look, if it was my choice, I would already be mining Bitcoin in every well pad of this company. And within a year, we would get rid of all debt we have, and we would be the cleanest company in oil and gas sector. But they don't want to do it. So yeah. Because he's an engineer, he rethought how we can do it. And also they had a great idea, also reusing heat. It's so many bright minds in engineering space, specifically who want to use this technology. And I mean, when technology is not only like Bitcoin transferring through transactions, but like Bitcoin mining for multiple reasons, for optimizing their energy operation.
Yeah, I think that's one of the directions that it seems like you agree with where the industry is going. I think that this becomes a massive proof of work. Bitcoin mining becomes a massive tool for combating climate change. I mean, if you think about just 100%. The ability to capture like methane emissions and then utilize that to generate economic value, there doesn't seem to be an actual use case for methane or a real solution to that problem outside of Bitcoin. And so I think that as more and more miners realize over time that that's the lowest cost energy, and that the incentive structure is there to have you outcompete from a cost perspective on the electricity side, the natural incentives of the network are going to drive more miners to want to pursue the lowest cost energy, which is some form of waste or bootstrapping an energy asset. And so it is kind of incredible how the conversation today around Bitcoin mining being bad for the environment is almost completely flipped upside down. Like, it's just the complete wrong way to look at it. But the people who are having that discussion aren't experts in energy or mining. So it's like a bunch of people talking about something that they're not involved in, that they don't know how it actually works.
Well, there's more research needs to come, you know, to the world, and people have to read it. But it's very tough, you know, to get to mainstream media and get quoted, or, you know, just write a good article. It's honestly, I have been interviewed very many times by major news outlets out there and, you know, podcasters. And sometimes, like, you give an interview and then you read an article, and it's like, guys, you just pick the things you wanted, right? Yeah. Versus us having a conversation here, me and you, and then hearing the whole piece, like, and there's like no certain things that you want to put in your narrative. Hear it out, a piece of content, read it, listen to it.
Yeah, when you take things out of context, it's just so easy to completely misrepresent someone's views if you just take a small piece. Like, I mean, I'm trying to remember this story. Someone had told me about a thing where, I'll just give a scenario. It's not the one that I was given, but let's say that you see two people on the street, and one guy's just standing there minding his own business, and then some other guy just comes out from nowhere, goes up to the guy and punches him in the face. And you just see that short clip. You're like, okay, well, that dude who went and punched the dude in the face is like an awful person, right? Mm-hmm. But then let's say that I give you some context and be like, oh, the dude who was standing there, he like had murdered someone in that guy's family and, you know, is a convicted criminal who should have gone to jail and didn't, right? All mm-hmm. of a sudden, your view of that one scenario is just completely different, right? And so I think that that's like in a physical context, but like just like from taking a part of a podcast interview or taking part of a conversation and just cutting out all the context and giving a sound bite, you can make someone sound or seem like they're saying something that they just completely disagree with or don't believe. And that's kind of the way that media today is ingested in many ways, is that like these sound bites are with these short attention spans, which is kind of scary that narratives can be spun and used so easily to change people's minds.
It's true. It's true. But, you know, on the positive side, that's why we have podcasts like yours, like, you know, news articles from cryptocurrency industry who are building our own narrative. Yeah. Now we figured like, okay, if we don't have an audience from major news outlets, we'll just create our own. There's a lot of people are following, you know, the podcasters, following even the people on Twitter post, you know, facts about cryptocurrency. I think it's getting better, frankly. It's not what it used to be. And some positive things Bitcoin mining does can be thrown away right now anymore. Like, everyone can see that. Like, this is not something like that you can disregard.
Yeah, there are some good news outlets as well. Like, for example, especially in our industry, and, you know, maybe this is me being biased, but I think that like I just had an article that was in CoinDesk, Cointelegraph, and a couple of times Bitcoin Magazine. Like, they're willing to say things that are pretty outrageous that I don't think you'd really see in the mainstream media. Like the one that was just published on CoinDesk was about this concept of, so you know how there used to be church and state. And they were pretty much together. And then you had the separation of church and state. The article was about how Bitcoin and sound money is going to eventually bring apart the separation of money and state. So right now, the whole concept that you have around the world is that money and state need to be one, right? The government, the issue, they print the money. But I think that if you have a decentralized sound money, that eventually you will see people realizing that you can have the separation of money and state, just like how before you didn't know that you could have the separation of church and state.
You know, decentralization of money is a huge topic because it's becoming more and more reasonable nowadays. I mean, you can see the results of poor, you know, monetary policies in in different countries, including the United States. You know, euro is cheaper than US dollar right now.
That's so wild.
Yeah, I think British pound is in the same area. And you can see clearly that some decisions were poorly made, and that's why things are happening. And the people themselves have to value money a little bit differently, right? Because we get used to, spending. It's more like consumerism that we live in. And now, like when the markets are turbulent and things are going bad and no one knows what's going to happen to get tomorrow, you're like, all right, now kind of you can reevaluate that life is different, that there is value in you. There should be value in your money. It should be value in your efforts at the end of the day. So, I mean, big topic, very big topic to go over. I'm honestly not a big expert, like in monetary policies and who is right, who is wrong. But, you know, printing money doesn't really help, in my opinion. So Bitcoin is totally opposite, right? So that's why it's gained so much traction amongst people who are against government, who are against, Federal Reserve, because it's a separate thing. It's no one controls it. Cool. And in addition, it does many more things.
Yeah, the true utility of Bitcoin, this is actually a concept that I like to bring into the conversation of, like, for example, when I'm talking about the environmental aspect of it, I feel like it's hard to have that discussion if you don't understand anything about Bitcoin, or if you're coming into that discussion thinking Bitcoin has no value. Like at the end of the day, everything that we use and love involves energy in some type of way. Produce something, it takes energy to produce. So if you're only going to look at the consumption side, then okay, well, it takes energy to literally do anything. It takes energy to create like your iPhone, or like to create your clothes, or to create pewter, right? We don't question, hey, was your shirt manufactured at a facility that was tied to the grid where it was 50% coal or something like that?
Sorry for interrupt. We don't question, why do we run refrigerators 24/7, do we?
Yeah, we definitely don't question that. Yeah.
Right?
I think everyone wants a refrigerator.
Like, why don't we shut it down from time to time, right?
yeah, exactly. Hey, you don't need food. Yeah.
You want everything fresh, right? What about, putting everything in your pantry and underneath the ground?
Yeah. Like, yeah. And then like, yeah, I mean, even just like little things like Christmas lights, right? It's like, yeah, they're pretty. They're awesome. It also takes a lot of energy to create a bunch of Christmas lights. But then like all of a sudden, when you're talking about like a freedom technology that can significantly improve the lives of billions of people around the world, like all of a sudden now, oh, there's no value in that. Like no value in something that could improve the lives of people. Pretty much every person under an oppressive regime around the world can benefit from this technology. It's almost like we've got a warped view on it. I mean, everyone has a warped view. Everyone comes from their own perspective, but I think it's an important perspective, right? Like this can help a lot of people. But if you are in a place with a strong currency, with access to banking, with access to pretty much all the things that electricity and harnessing energy can give you, then you might be blind to how beneficial Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining actually is.
You know, it's funny that until Bitcoin mining started utilizing flare gas, no one even knew about flare gas.
That's
and now
yeah.
Everyone starts telling that, well, it's still a waste of energy because you don't do anything with that energy but mine Bitcoin. And I'm like, are you guys serious? This flare gas was going literally in the air and you didn't care. Only until Bitcoin mining came into the game. So Bitcoin mining has a very important educational role to play. When we started our venture in flare gas, I literally couldn't find any data online. Every data we had to harness ourselves, like bring from different sites, read about it, understand where this flaring happening, why it's happening, and so on. Like you couldn't find it. The like only research papers you could find were like 2002, 2005. And now like you ask like any guy in crypto about flare gas, like, oh yeah, we know it's a gas going up into the air. Like everyone knows.
Yeah.
Right? Like, well, and other like experts come in, well, it's still the natural gas generators. They still have CO2 emissions. Yeah, duh, they do, of course. But we were burning that thing. Now we get that money, we pay taxes. No one pays attention to that, right? You don't get taxed for burning the gas into the air. When you make value of that gas, you actually pay tax. That pays for your schools, for your police, you know, for your social security, for a bunch of other things. Like, people don't think that much. It's like, oh, it's just bad.
Yeah.
It's funny. Nowadays, I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
When people say that.
Yeah, it's funny. And it's interesting, too. You're shaping, I don't know the right way to say this, but it's like almost like taking one thing, putting it into a different form factor until it's actually useful, right? It's like, okay, methane, it's being polluted. All of a sudden, you turn it into electricity. All of a sudden, you turn that into Bitcoin. All of a sudden, that Bitcoin gets turned into whatever else it gets turned into. But it's a really, really fascinating process that you guys are involved in. I think that it's an important conversation. And I think more people are going to eventually hear about it and it'll become more mainstream. But yeah, I'm really curious to see when that starts getting legs in terms of like more mainstream media. Like when people who are out there talking about how they care about the environment, which is great. There are a lot of things that need to be done when they start to finally accept and say, hey, this is useful for combating climate change. Because I feel like right now on the surface, that whole conversation, a lot of people are talking about how Bitcoin mining is bad for the environment. So if you're one of those people who thinks it's bad and then all of a sudden comes put in touch with new research or new information, there's going to be some cognitive dissonance there where you're going to think, well, I was just shitting on Bitcoin for like the past like 4 years talking about how like it's awful for the environment. It's going to be a kind of weird change in perspective to all of a sudden now be like, oh, wait, this is one of the strongest tools out there to combat global warming.
Absolutely. Well, you can always say that refrigerators are also bad for the environment.
Yeah, that's true. The refrigerator thing is crazy too, because that's another just wild technology that I'm like, thank God we have refrigerators.
It's true, right?
yeah. Just like all the little things that.
So like, it's, really you know, it's about. The thing. It's like those people who find things useful, they're not going to look for bad things in them. Like, oh, I have a fridge. It's a good thing. I don't bother to use 24/7 power. But then there is some Bitcoin guy who uses flare gas in North Dakota, he's probably polluting the environment.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, the other crazy thing about it too is, and it's going to be kind of quick. Let me know if this doesn't make sense. It's an idea I've kind of been thinking about. But at the end of the day, each person in the world is using different amounts of energy, just based on like your daily activities, what you consume, what you use. People in developed nations technically use a lot more energy than people in developing nations, right? So going off of that, if you have an entire country, you're putting a limit on the amount of energy that an entire country can use. It sounds pretty hypocritical if you're in one country utilizing so much energy, and then all of a sudden in some other part of the world, you're saying, okay, well, you guys can't use as much energy. So like the energy that I want to hold all you guys to is 1/10 the amount of energy per person to meet this max or cap on your energy that I'm using here in the Western world. That just seems kind of hypocritical in many ways to say, I can use 10 times the energy, but this country, to meet your limit, you each have to use 1/10 the energy that I'm currently using per day. Did that make sense weird to say out loud.
Yeah, but, of course, it does make a lot of sense. I mean, of course, inequality, I mean, it has been a big deal on a global scale. I mean, like, you know, one country's live better than others, and there are reasons for that. It's not just like a fact. You know, energy in general is so important in our lives that we can't just ignore the fact that we need it. And today is the energy mix is such a big mix that we can't just say one thing is bad and another thing is good. Like when you flip your switch at home, you don't really ask your question, is it coming from solar or wind or nuclear or coal? You don't, honestly, you don't. You just have it online. And there are other folks who worry about it on the other end of the wire. So that's why it's more hypocritical, Will, to basically, you know, those examples when you fly a private jet and you lobby the bills against oil and gas. I mean, that's real hypocrisy. I guess we just need to cool off on things and take a look at energy markets with energy markets eyes versus politics and polls and feedback from constituents who are going to vote in next elections. And that has become such a big problem. And one of the reasons to that, I think, because most of the politicians, they've been there for quite a long time. So they're using the same techniques and tools they were using before, but the times are different. The times are different. There is more solar and wind energy in Texas than anywhere in the world, probably per capita. And yet oil and gas folks in Texas are bad guys. It's like, you guys figure, right? Like, is Texas good or bad? Like, they have so much solar energy and they have so much oil. Like, so pick, you know, pick a side. So it's about, I mean, of course the transition is happening, but we just can't ban one thing and, you know, and pretend to thing happen. You know, a big example of this, since we're talking about politics and on the podcast, we can talk whatever, I believe. But,
yeah,
you know, a big example of it, what's happening in Europe right now, specifically in Germany. You know, Germans are the biggest proponent of solar panels and wind and, you know, conserving energy. And at the same time, they were buying natural gas from dictatorship, where there's the worst flaring numbers in the world.
So, I did not know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah, of course. Russia has the largest flare gas emissions in the world. More to that, the work conditions are very different. And another thing, I mean, they just invaded another country. And at the same time, Germany pretends that they have solar and wind. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Yeah. So, and it's all about the money. They were buying that natural gas because it was cheaper to buy that than to have their own. So, like, we have to clearly talk about the facts from different angles, especially when we talk about energy. And now when, you know, Russia started using their energy supply to Europe as a war tool, everyone was like, oh, okay, can we just stop this transition for a little bit until we figure things out? Like, yeah, you can stop it for a little bit, but why don't we just figure out how to live together, how solar folks can work with oil and gas folks?
Yeah, exactly.
And they actually do. That's so interesting. The largest energy companies, you know, they do invest in solar and wind. They invest in nuclear. They invest in, you know, in industries that they see to be a future. But future has to come gradually. We can't just press the bottom of shutting down every coal plant and natural gas power plant in the United States with the hope there are not going to be any blackouts. Well, actually, we can, because now we have Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. I would regret if I didn't ask, but I'm curious as to like what your view on the current conflict is in like Russia and Ukraine, because I feel like it's been one of those things where it's so hard, like just watching the news and hearing so much information. And I feel like it's such a politicized issue that I've almost like taken a step back and haven't been like paying attention to it as much as I should have, just because else it would consume like too much, like all of my thoughts, you know? So I'm curious as to like what your view on it is and where it might be headed.
Well, Will, it's very tough questions for me personally, because it's, you know, my answer going to be always biased, but you know, whatever, I mean, news and whichever news you watch, when everything started, I was talking to my cousin on the FaceTime and the rocket was blowing on the back, basically in the backyard, and she was screaming and hiding. It was insanely horrible situation. My sister, my youngest sister, she was in Kiev. She's a student on the 24th of February, and she woke up from explosions, and it was insane. So it's a huge problem. It's the biggest, I mean, it's the biggest war since 1945 in Europe. And it's completely not about NATO. It's not about, you know, Ukraine giving up territories. It's about one person, honestly. And that person just has imperialist views. And that person wants to invade. And he would keep invading until he's dead, you know, honestly. So that's the issue. The horrible thing is so many people are dying just every honestly day. And the you know, Elon Musk tweeted recently about like some people were pro-Russian. And that was very wrong to say, because there are some people who spoke Russian and they had like pro-Russian views. But, you know, in America, you speak Spanish, too. It doesn't mean you you want to annex Texas. Texas was annexed, but it doesn't mean you want to join Mexico, right? So like it's different. Like, so it's super complicated, super tough. Ukrainians are kicking ass with the help of Americans, of course, but it's horrible. It's the biggest problem with, I think it's going to be the biggest problem of 21st century eventually.
Yeah, and this is goes to one of the concepts as well, just like war in general. It's kind of it's crazy that it's almost like it's innate, like when you have like those types of imperialist views, and you mentioned like down to the views of one person who are like, okay, well, we're going to go and invade. But I think it also stems from just with better technology and the access to do this. I mean, in the old days, you couldn't have one crazy imperialist who all of a sudden could bring down the threat of that much violence, because you're limited based on the technology you have. Like, that's a scary thing about the potential for something like World War III, where you have such incredibly powerful technology where it's like mutually assured destruction if certain technologies use. But yeah, I mean, thoughts and prayers go out to you and everyone and your family and every person who's involved in that conflict or any other conflict around the world. It is a crazy, crazy thing that it happens, and it's been happening like more and more over time. And, you know, it's a very unstable time right now. That's for sure.
Very unstable time. It's very unstable time. It's horrible, but you know, it could have been prevented. I wouldn't say that like it's like the fault of the West only. I mean, the Ukrainians also have some fault that they didn't prepare, and you know, they have been fighting each other. I mean, fighting like politicians, but the, you know, but it's horrible in general that it's happening, and everyone is tired of it. Like, my family is tired of it. Like, I'm tired of it. I can't live normal life. Okay, you know, I didn't know what's happened in Ukraine before the war at all. You know, I've been in the United States for a long time. I kind of didn't pay attention. Now it's like, you know, people and you care. So it's horrible situation. It's everyone is tired. Everyone is to be over. The reality is, can't just stop anymore, because like, we can't just say, well, let's have a truce and figure something out. And that's what people kind of misunderstanding, because we already had that. You know, Putin invaded Georgia country in 2008. And since it was a very small country, no one really paid attention. And it was quick, because Georgia is 4 million people, so they didn't have a chance to fight back. And then Putin invaded Ukraine and annexed Crimea, you know, with a matter of days. And everyone is like, closed eyes, like, you know, it's fine. Then they started, you know, a war in eastern Ukraine, in Luhansk and Donetsk area, and they were doing that there. And also everyone's like, okay, it's like proxy war and stuff. So people didn't really want to bother, you know, because everyone has very deep relationship. You know, Russia has big deep relationship with Europe. Europe has with America. It's like, we're in global economy right now. So people are like, it's not good to do, but can we just close our eyes? But now it's no more and more. And, you know, the guy may stop, you know, at La Manche next to, you know, that's the reality. So that's the problem people can see and can see. And the news, the reality is actually way worse than what the news showing.
Really?
Way worse. Like, I have, because there are other problems that you don't see. Like, I have my father lives there, and it's, you don't have water, you don't have food, everything's too expensive, there's no supply, no gasoline, and it's a huge country. It's 45 million people, and it's the size of Texas in Europe, you know? So the things are worse. People don't have work, so they don't work, so there's no, economy doesn't work. Then those areas where there is not a war conflict specifically, I mean, they just shoot missiles on it. And so it's nowhere as safe as before. So it's bad. But anyway, I think it's you'll decide either to keep it in the podcast or not. But it's a big topic, frankly.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know that that's absolutely definitely not an easy thing to share.
Well, thank you for asking.
Yeah, definitely. So I got one last question, but before I ask the final question, Before I ask the final question, for everyone out there who's listening and wants to follow with what you're doing or support you in any way, you know, in the company, how can they connect with you?
You can guys go to the website easyblockchain.net or can follow me on Sergey Gera in Twitter. Please actually do follow me there. I have a very, very small number of followers. I need some more. And we actually write a very good blog on easyblockchain.net where we talk about energy, Bitcoin, and other matters. So I think there's some useful information for you guys.
Great. Yeah. So the final question is, what is one belief you hold to be true that the majority of people would disagree with you about? And I'll give you a second to think here and also just plug something new that SaaS Mining's been doing. So on Twitter, we just started doing these Twitter spaces where we bring in leaders to actually later today, we're talking with Dennis Porter. It's Thursdays at 3:30 p.m. I guess by the time that this episode comes out, we'll have already had the discussion. But yeah, if you like the podcast and you want to go and start following us on Twitter and start joining some of these conversations, we also at the end of every hour, let people actually come up on stage and ask questions with us or the guests. So I'm normally on, and one or two other people from SaaS Mining are normally joining those. So yeah, if you like the podcast, go check that out.
Absolutely. I will join you guys.
Yeah. Answer to the question, one belief that you hold to be true that the majority of people would disagree with you about.
That Bitcoin mining is a tool to resolve wasted energy problem.
That's a good answer. I believe the exact same thing. And I think that we would both be in the minority with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, man, thank you again so much for coming on to the episode. This was a lot of fun. And, you know, this is the second time we've done this episode. So we're going to have to do some more in the future. And we'll have to loop you in as one of the guests on the Twitter spaces in the future as well.
Of course. Well, the pleasure is mine, Bill. Thank you very much for having me.